It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
All right, welcome back to the Dory Monson Show. I'm Jack Stein, sitting in for Mr. Dory Monson, who is under the weather this afternoon. Have you heard of the name Pete Buttigieg? Because I had never heard of Pete Buttigieg. I had never heard that he was a serious thinker or a serious individual until about 18 months ago. And then all of a sudden...
Welcome back to the Dory Monson Show. This is not Dory Monson. This is producer Nicole. Dory is on vacation, and so am I. Dave Bose is filling in as a special treat. I've picked some of my favorite interviews from the last few months. So here we go. Dory Monson with Rainn Wilson.
Hey, Rainn. Good to talk to you. I appreciate you coming on with me this afternoon.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah.
Glad to be here.
I'm always looking for common ground with my guests. So I thought I would let you know that I was the girls basketball coach at Shorecrest High School for 8 years. So
holy moly.
There is a common bond that we have right off the bat here. How about that?
Look at that. Go Highlanders.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
And my wife is the college and career counselor at Shorecrest right now. So if she had encountered a 15, 16-year-old Rainn Wilson at Shorecrest and advised you on what your life could and should be, what kind of advice would you have gotten?
That would have been a sad and sorry sight. I was at 15. I was skinny as a beanpole, pretty pimply, and very low self-esteem. And I was, for a while there, I played bassoon in the orchestra. I was in the Model United Nations. I was on the chess team and computer club all at the same time.
So you were
that gives you any sense.
You were one of the cool kids. That's what you're telling me.
Yeah, I was really cool. I was a celebrated jock and homecoming king.
Yeah, yes.
And this was back in the days. This was back in the early 80s when you would get your butt kicked for being a nerd. You know, there were no cool nerds. You know, there weren't any billionaire nerds,
right,
or nerd rock stars. You were lowest rung on the totem pole.
So how do you make the transition from that? Because I've heard you say that you played Dungeons and Dragons, not just every night, but pretty much every second of the weekend. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So how do you go from that? Because, you know, breaking into showbiz and people are saying no all the time early on, and that can be kind of self-esteem sucking. So how do you go from that kind of kid to somebody who has, you know, scaled the mountains now in your biz?
Well, you know, that's a great question. And it really is. It has to do with just I fell in love with acting. And so I took this sharp turn from being just a general all around nerd to being just a drama nerd.
Yeah.
And I really fell in love with acting. I fell in love with the art of acting. I fell in love with the art of the theater. And I wanted to study it, and I wanted to do it more than anything in the world. So when that passion gets ignited, that will carry you a long way. So that was sparked in my heart and in my gut, and I just wanted to be an actor more than anything. I wanted to tell stories. I wanted to be a part of making art and theater and storytelling. And so, yeah, there's been so much rejection along the way, and so many hard times from that, but also really great times. And I'm really lucky that I get to make a career as an actor.
And did that spark come from within, or did somebody help ignite it?
Well, and I'm glad you're bringing that up, because, you know, we're having this event on May 30th at the Paramount Theater in Seattle. That's a benefit for the Mona Foundation. And the Mona Foundation supports educational initiatives all around the world. It's a nonprofit, and this is a fundraiser for Mona. And for me, it was my education that helped give me that spark and that inspiration. I was really lucky to have some great teachers at Shorecrest, at the University of Washington, at other schools I attended, at NYU in New York. But the teachers that believed in me and the doors that were opened because of my education really helped paved the way for me to be an actor. And that's why I love the Mona Foundation. I really believe in education. And for a billion people on this planet, they don't have access to quality education. And if we want to make the world a better place, helping in education, putting our focus in education is the key.
Yeah, and, you know, all three of our daughters graduated from Shorecrest. And I remember when they were little girls, we'd go up to the theater productions because they were very, very high quality for a high school. So I can understand how that could get in your soul if you know, get a taste of that at a really young age.
Yeah, and I was fortunate because my parents supported me in being an artist, and you know, they weren't the kind of parents that are like, oh, you need to get your accounting degree so you have something practical. They really wanted me to explore what I loved. So I was really fortunate to have that as well.
Then you, of course, after all those early struggles, you hit it huge in The Office. And I'll tell you, you know, for my generation, I grew up and I watched every episode of MASH 20, 30 times. Seinfeld, the same thing. Now I know for my daughters, it's The Office. And I'm amazed that you're able to, when you had such a finely crafted character in Dwight Schrute, is it hard to escape that character as you want to do so many other things in your life from here on out?
No, it's, you know, I get asked that question a lot. Like, listen, you know, Dwight Schrute opened so many doors for me. Being on The Office, it gave me so many possibilities. I was able to do feature films and star in them. I was able to buy a house. You know, I had a lot of great travels and adventures. I'm so super grateful to be a part of that show. It's a great show. It's got a great legacy. Kids are listening to it and watching it more and more over the years because it's on Netflix now and they're binge watching it. And I'm thrilled, and I will always be super grateful for the role of Dwight. But listen, you know, I was acting professionally for 14 years, 15 years before I did Dwight. And I'll be acting for another, you know, 20 or 30 years now after Dwight. And I'm going to play a lot of different roles, and I'm lucky that I still have those doors open to me. Of course, I'm always going to be known as Dwight first and foremost.
Yeah.
And that's great.
Have you figured out, because like I said, Seinfeld's kind of in the same realm, what makes a show? Because it's still, The Office is still the most viewed show on Netflix. I mean, they're in a gigantic panic because they might lose the streaming rights in a couple of years. Have you figured out what takes a show from really good to the pantheon of the all-time greats?
You know, the only thing that I do know about a show that you want to come back to again and again is that show is about a family. And it's a family you want to hang out with. And so the great shows like The Office, like Friends, like Seinfeld, like MASH, they're a quirky, eclectic, lovable, flawed family that you care about them as characters and you want to hang out with them. And they keep having the same kind of dilemmas posed, and they keep kind of overcoming them in the same way and failing to overcome them in the same way. And that's what all great shows have in common.
Yeah, and there is some kismet involved too. I mean, because it was just magical the way all those characters came together. It really was.
Yeah, we were lucky. We had the best writing staff.
Yeah.
We obviously had Steve Carell as our leader, and he's fantastic. So a lot of things came together in the right way.
And lots of stuff onward and upward for Rainn Wilson, including, like we said, this event coming up at the end of the month at the Paramount Theater, Rainn Wilson and His Neighborhood Friends. So what are people going to see when they come out to the Paramount?
Well, it's an evening to celebrate the Mona Foundation on its 20th anniversary. There's going to be entertainment and music and comedy and hijinks and some heartfelt and important discussions at the same time. So it's kind of the best of both worlds. It's entertainment, and it's also and it's going to be great entertainment, and it's also for a great cause. So Joel McHale is going to be there. He was from the show Community. He's a stand-up comic, was on Talk Soup. He's another Seattle boy, went to University of Washington, was on Almost Live in Seattle for years. Very funny guy. He's going to do stand-up. We've got Michael Franti from Spearhead. He's a great artist. He's done kind of like a Bob Marley style singer. He does great stuff, really uplifting, fun music.
Nice.
Chris Ballew from Presidents of the United States of America is going to be performing, and some other great musical acts and guests as well. And people learn a lot about Mona Foundation and education along the way.
Very cool. You left out one key note on Joel McHale's resume, by the way. My former radio intern. You left that out.
Holy moly, no kidding.
Yeah, Joel's my intern. We were basketball teammates for 2 years in a little media league when we were both at King 5. Yeah, he's a pretty good friend of mine.
Oh, that's fantastic. I didn't know that. I knew he was a Husky and a tight end on the Huskies.
Yes, he was. Yeah, he's a wonderful guy. So, okay, that's going to be a great event. Rain, it's great talking with you. Appreciate you coming on with me today.
Thanks so much. I had a blast.
That was my recent conversation with actor Rainn Wilson. We got a lot more to do as the Dory Monson Show rolls on.
Jack, are you in the building somewhere? Or remote somewhere?
Yeah.
Are you back?
I'll tell you something, buddy. You shell out, or rather I shell out, hundreds of dollars to the organization that I won't name, but we all know this organization. They provide tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of people with internet. And then spontaneously in my new home, they have decided that about every, let's say, 4 or 5 times a week, probably about every, let's ballpark it, 28 hours or so, that the internet spontaneously cuts out. Now, I have spoken to the fine people at this organization, and I have said, hey, what gives? And they say, we have no record of that. We have no record of that on our end, so it must be on your end. And I'm thinking to myself, well, of course it's on my end because it happens to me when I am doing my job. But how could they not see it is the main question that I ask myself. But, you know, that's neither here.
Jack, did you tell them that you were a medium-level radio star at least? I mean, that would have probably sealed the deal.
Well, so what I learned a trick from a buddy of mine. His dad owned a bunch of pizza parlors. A ton of them, talking dozens of them. And one of the things that he found was that if a call got dropped or something like that, he could call the people who handled his phone service, and he would complain. And he would say, well, you cost my business money. And so they would take that dollar amount off of his bill. So for years, he ran this ruse where he was getting basically free phone service.
Perfect.
Well, for just calling this company and saying, I'm going to cancel my service. And they would say, oh, please, no, we'll deduct the cost from your bill, and we're so sorry. So that is what Jack Stein will be doing after the Dory Monson Show. What I wanted to say about Pete Buttigieg was basically this. I am not a fan of the guy, but I am told that I should be a fan of the guy for some reason. As we all know, Pete Buttigieg, mayor of South Bend, Indiana, he was on with Chris Wallace yesterday. We won't play the audio clip because we don't necessarily have the time for it, but I will give you a play-by-play of things that occurred. He is speaking with Chris Wallace, who you may love him, you may hate him, but he is a bulldog of an interviewer. Pete Buttigieg says that the new infrastructure plan will create something like 19 million new jobs. Now, you might be hearing that and you might be saying, well, that's the transportation secretary, Pete Buttigieg. Obviously, he knows what he's talking about. Otherwise, he wouldn't say it, right? He wouldn't just lie to the American people. And then Chris Wallace comes in and says, yeah, you know, looking at the numbers, it's actually going to only be about 2.7 million new jobs at the very tippy top. And then Pete Buttigieg says, yeah, you're right. I should have been more precise. Yeah, you know, I mean, what do you got? You got 19 million, you got 2.7 million. I mean, the difference between the two is just nominal. Hey, what are you going to do? It's not like I'm the transportation secretary or anything like that. But what got me about it the most is that no one is going to make a big deal out of it outside of maybe me and Dory Monson and John Curley. No one is going to make a big deal out of it. It's just going to fly underneath the radar, and people are going to say, well, you know, if they do talk about it, they're going to say, well, you know, it's easy for someone to get excited about this infrastructure bill, even though only between 5 and 6% of it actually goes to infrastructure and the rest of it goes to pet projects and union deals. So that's where we're at right now with American politics. This is why I bring it up. Is that someone who has a job at the highest levels of government, the transportation secretary, can go on national news and say, yeah, it's 19 million new jobs. Hey, And who wouldn't like that, right? And then when he gets called on it, rather than saying, oh, yeah, you know what, I totally lied about that, he said, I should have been more precise. More precise is if he had said, Sean, correct me if I'm wrong about this, but more precise would be if he said, we're going to get 17.5 million new jobs, and then Chris Wallace comes on and says, it's going to be more like 16.4. And then he goes, yes, I should have been more precise. The difference between 2.7 million and 19 million is vast. Correct? Or are we all just in this weird kind of Alice in Wonderland world where we can just throw out numbers and hope for the best?
You are correct, Jack. You are correct.
We are filling in for Mr. Dory Monson. We're going to take a really quick break. When we get back, we're going to check in with Greg Gutfeld over his interactions and thoughts on people suffering from withdrawals from former President Donald Trump. We'll be right back after this. All right, before we get to this Greg Gutfeld audio that I'd like to get to, Ted Nugent said something that was beyond, kind of beyond stupid. And I'm a fan of Nugent. I'm a fan of some of his politics. I'm a fan of, made a lot of great records. He's a great guitar player. But he said something the other day on a radio show that was just beyond stupid. It was, if he had just done a little bit of research, he could have saved himself from just sounding so foolish. But he was talking about the lockdowns. He doesn't like them. I agree with that. And then he goes on to say just the most awkward statement about COVID-1 through 19. Here's what that sounded like.
You know, this year's tour is canceled again. Are you kidding me? The production companies won't let us tour again this year. Dirty, lying, scam, smoking mirrors, COVID-19 freaks. You know, I guess I would ask you, because I'm addicted to truth, logic, and common sense, and my common sense meter would demand the answer to, why weren't we shut down for COVID 1 through 18? There was a COVID 1 and there was a COVID 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. COVID 1 through 18 didn't shut anything down, but whoa, COVID-19, even though it's 99.8% survivable, why didn't we shut down for the AIDS epidemic or the flu or the Spanish flu or the bird flu or the West Nile flu or influenza every year? They claim 500,000 people have died from COVID-19. Bullshit.
Okay, so I will admit to you that I made the same mistake that Ted Nugent made about COVID-19. I used to do a radio program with a doctor, and we would answer medical questions, and people would call in, and they would yell at us. And I actually said the exact same thing. I said, well, what was COVID-18 like? What was COVID-17 like? And then the good doctor, my very good friend Dr. Z, explained to me that it's actually the way that they name it from the year that it was first discovered. So it comes from the specific disease, the coronavirus, and then the year it was discovered, 2019, SARS-CoV-2-19. That's how you get that number. So it's not as if we've been having 1 through 18. And as much as I appreciate everything that the Nuge just said right there, and as much as I agree with him, when it just sounds so cringy when he says, oh, if you had a little bit of common sense out there, what happened? And it's just, I agree with you, Nuge. I agree with you. But if you had just done a little bit of reading, just a little bit beforehand, you'd be winning more people over. But now you just sound ridiculous. And again, all apologies to the Nuge, because he is such a talented, talented man. But I just couldn't let that slide by. Speaking of, Greg Gutfeld was talking about Joe Biden over the weekend, and he was on Media Buzz, and he was talking about the difference in treatment between Joe Biden and also Trump. And he actually makes a really good point about how Donald Trump is a drug. But before he said that, he was talking about how Joe Biden was treated by the media. Here is what that sounded like.
Everybody deserves a chance. I am more disgusted about how he had lied to the American public as a unifier. The big lie was that Joe was a centrist and he was going to bring us all together. Meanwhile, basically branding half the country as Neanderthals. Again, it's about branding groups, right? It's never people. It's group. I mean, it's never persons, it's groups. We're all about individuals. But he, I mean, look, he used the fine people hoax, the drinking bleach hoax to smear an entire group. And now you're seeing the alignment of the gated media narrative, which is about protecting and suppressing stories about Joe's slowness or cognitive disabilities, or I would say disabilities, but cognitive decline. They can't do that. Meanwhile, and I wouldn't bring that up except for 4 years, they talked about Trump's cognitive issues.
His mental
the
health,
fact
right.
that he was a sociopath. Right.
Well, Biden's...
Right. So that's open game.
So before we get to the rest of this clip, and by the way, Gutfeld is exactly right about that, Cairo Radio's own Aaron Granillo has come in, per my invitation, with breaking news as it pertains to Mr. Jay Inslee. Aaron Granillo, please tell us, what is this breaking news that you have for us?
Well, the numbers are in officially from the governor's office. The case numbers and hospitalizations that we've been waiting for to see if any counties would roll back. And indeed, three counties will be rolling back to phase two, Cowlitz, Whitman, and Pierce County. So those three counties have failed in both metrics in terms of new cases over the past 2 weeks and hospitalizations over the past 2 weeks. We thought there might have been five, but again, these three will roll back to phase two. And I believe this takes effect on Friday. The announcement comes down right now, so the counties have a few days to prepare. But under these guidelines, you will see tighter restrictions on things like indoor dining, gyms, churches, a handful of other businesses for Cowlitz, Whitman, and Pierce counties.
So when we talk about these kinds of restrictions, Aaron, just for everybody's edification, would you happen to know what this is going to look like for the fine people of those counties?
So most of it does pertain to capacity at certain businesses. So these aren't going to be any lockdowns like we saw in phase one. No businesses are closing. But things like indoor dining, you're going back from 50% to 25% capacity. And I'll just read you the quote from the governor. He says these metrics trends are driven by the virus. He goes on to say it's like a football game. We've gone 95 yards on a 99-yard drive. We can't let up now. These are not punitive actions. They are to save lives and protect public health. That's from the governor's office just moments ago.
There's something odd about having to throw in the, hey, you guys, come on, I'm not punishing anybody. This is just my, kind of interesting to throw that in at the end of that. Aaron Granillo, you want to stick around through the next segment, maybe let people know as well what's going on at the last couple minutes in the segment?
Yeah, I'm happy to. Yeah, absolutely. I'll stick around. Yeah.
Cool. Thanks very much, Aaron Granillo. And just to wrap this up as it pertains to Greg Gutfeld, before we just completely lose our minds about phase two or phase three restrictions, arbitrary and vague as they are, Gutfeld was talking about how Trump is like a drug to people in major media. And here's what that sounded like.
Trump is a drug for the media. It's a drug in that they loathe using it. They talk about how they're going to quit. They wake up in the morning with a Trump hangover. I can't believe I did all that Trump last night. Oh my God. And then they hop right on it. It's like they have that extra dose of Trump to get over the Trump hangover.
He's exactly right about it. And honestly, I experience it myself when it comes to the difference between the Biden administration and the Trump administration. I had a natural read of the Trump administration. I had an idea of what their policies were going to be like. I had an idea of the kind of speeches that Trump was going to make. It made my job a lot easier, but also a lot more interesting because there was a lot more depth to it. Now with the Biden administration, because everything is so kind of contrived and homogenized and everything is so prepared and everything is so scripted for Joe Biden, I think I've seen him answer questions off the cuff less than a dozen times. He's always reading. Now everything becomes much more of this kind of stagnant uphill battle to try to figure out what exactly the Biden administration is going to do. You never know from day to day. One day they're saying that they're not going to keep working on the wall. The next day they're going to keep working on the wall. One day they're not going to send kids back to Mexico for their asylum hearings. The next day that's what we're going to start doing. It is so all over the place. So frenetic and so frantic that it's much harder to kind of get a read of it. And as a result, I find myself missing the good old days where I could just roll out of bed, look at a tweet from President Trump and say, okay, great, I got the whole show lined up. And I guarantee you that Don Lemon, Chris Cuomo, Rachel Maddow, Chris Hayes, any of these figures, they miss it as well. There's actually something going on right now in media that they're calling the Trump slump, where major organizations are just letting people go because they don't need them anymore. CNN is letting staff go because they don't need them anymore. Speaking of the Nuge, we have to take a really quick break. When we get back, got a whole lot more coming down, including another update from Mr. Aaron Granillo. We'll be right back after this. All right, we're back. You're listening to the Dory Monson Show. I'm Jack Stein. Aaron Granillo is here to once again deliver the bad news. Aaron, you are, I think this is now not once, not twice, but thrice you have delivered bad news on a show that I have been on.
Man.
Now we have to talk about
moving back. At least it's nice outside. It's sunny, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, nice for some people if you look at the way that these phase systems are set up. Aaron, I'm not going to draw you into my world of opinion radio where I just rant and rave. But what I will say is this, is that when you have an arbitrary metric and you throw out numbers and then you say, okay, well, we'll analyze these numbers on this day. And then by this day, you can only have 25% versus 30% or 50%. Me, with my common sense Ted Nugent brain, I think, why? Why do any of this? Why do any of this? People can just go across county lines. What does it make any difference? Now that I have that out of my system, Aaron Granillo, please share with the fine people of Cairo Radio the good news.
Well, Jack, despite what you think, this is what the state all along and the governor has said all along, how we will operate in this state in terms of COVID restrictions. And the governor set us up for this last week when he said cases and hospitalizations were rising.
This is not Judgment Day Monday. The score's the score. This score is determined by the COVID virus, not us.
And right now, Jack, the score says that the virus is winning in three counties that now have to roll back from phase three to phase two. They are Pierce County, Whitman County, and Cowlitz County. And here's why. It's all the metrics. It is all the numbers that you just bashed on. But but the state has made this the hard line, and they're not going to it's a red line. They're not going to cross it. So large counties have to have fewer than 200 new cases per 100,000 residents over a 2-week period and less than 5 hospitalizations per 100,000 over a 2-week period. Pierce, Cowlitz, and Whitman have all passed that if you want to call it arbitrary, that's you can call it that, but they have crossed that threshold that the state has set. Pierce County has 268 new cases over the past 2 weeks, averaging 7 hospitalizations. Cowlitz, 332 cases, 12 hospitalizations. And Whitman, where University of Washington is located in Pullman, 416 new cases and 6 hospitalizations over the past 2 weeks. So what does this mean for all of these counties? Well, it means that tighter restrictions are coming down. I believe they do take effect on Friday. I just confirmed that with Hannah Scott. She says this will be Friday when these new restrictions take effect. But things like indoor dining will go back from 50% to 25%. Religious services, 50 to 25%. For instance, you know, at-home gatherings, the state recommends no more than 5 people. Again, eating and drinking establishments, 25%. So, you know, these are restrictions. The state is mandating them. It'll be interesting now to see how many businesses actually do roll back and abide by these new rules. And we also have to keep in mind that because the state has set these hard lines, they say that they will reevaluate the case numbers every 3 weeks. So if the state holds true with that, that means Pierce, Cowlitz, and Whitman are going to be under these tighter restrictions starting this Friday and then for the next 3 Fridays until then. Now, we can also look at what happened last week, though. The governor changed the guidelines, sort of changed the rules mid-game, if you will. Before, he was saying you have to fail either in both the case count or the hospitalization count. He changed that on Friday and said you now have to fail in both of those metrics. So we'll see what happens as more people become eligible to get vaccinated. This Thursday, everybody 16 years and older can get vaccinated. We'll see what happens. Will he say, okay, vaccination rates are rising. Maybe cases start dropping as more people get vaccinated. And he'll say, maybe we don't evaluate this every 3 weeks. But for now, that's the rule. Pierce, Kalitz, and Whitman are going to be in phase two starting this Friday and for the next three Fridays.
Aaron Granillo, you're a champion. And I appreciate you so very much for coming on and spreading all of this information and letting the good people know. Although this is bad news for many people, I still appreciate you coming on and letting everybody know.
Yeah, of course. Happy to do it.
See you next time, Aaron.
See ya.
I did want to touch on one more thing before we have to get out of here for the segment. There's breaking news about a shooting going on in Knoxville, Tennessee. It's at a high school. And tragic. There's not a whole lot of information that's coming out about it. It looks like there was an officer who was shot as well as a couple of people, but there's just not a lot of information at this time. And I want to kind of preemptively say this, because I guarantee you that this is going to be a thing in the next couple of days, is that when people try to fight against the phrase thoughts and prayers, when people try to say that you saying that is somehow an insult to the people who are suffering right now, or somehow that is inappropriate to say, I think that we should stand by it and really reinforce for people that when I say something like, oh, you know, thoughts and prayers to that officer and those children, when I say that, that means much more than just I put it on my Twitter feed and hope for the best. When I say that, it means that I walk around with it. When I say that, it means that I think about it and these people's lives are in my mind, right? So over the next couple of days, I would not shy away, if I were you, from posting something that says thoughts and prayers to the victims of this tragedy, and then stand by that and explain to people what it means. Because that's the new meme that everybody likes to rip on, the new meme that the mainstream media loves to rip on. They say, well, your thoughts and prayers aren't doing anything. The point is that it does do something. It does something for a community and it does something for an individual. So don't cheapen it by trying to have people say, don't allow people to come at you when you say that, when they say, well, your thoughts and prayers aren't doing anything. That's not true. It does a tremendous amount and you cannot tell me otherwise. We have to take a really quick break. When we get back, Stacey Jo Ross will be coming into the studio to do a segment that normally we only do on nights, but we're going to try it out this afternoon, called Inside Stein's Mind, where we go deep, deep inside of my mind and you learn all kinds of truths and wisdoms about the universe. We'll be right back after this quick break.